We're hitting the home stretch of the verses from Canto 10, Chapter 9. We're going to begin verse 21. So a little quick overview here. 20 and 21 are a summary of what Shukadeva Goswami wants to narrate in response to Maharaj Prakrit's question back in chapter 8. This is chapter 9. The exalted position of Yashoda and Nanda. The response, what austerities did they undergo? Some understandings was presented about Drona and Dara, and we've been hearing repeatedly. Drona and Dara are partial expansions of the eternal, Nanda and Yashoda in the spiritual world. They reside in the heavenly realm, and they're a particular category of associates of the Lord. We heard some of that yesterday. And so the summary is the very, very special position of Yashoda, but it means Nanda and Yashoda. She's in the spotlight because of this Damodar Leela, but both of them. So 21, translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service. But he is not easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. So we're going to be hearing just a prelude. We're going to be hearing about jnanis and yogis and tapasvis and those categories that are mentioned in the verse. And they're going to be identified to some degree, at least some of them, as Shanta Bhaktas, and I want to say ahead of time, they're not the only ones that may be in the category of Shanta Bhaktas. Meaning, there are the jnanis, tapasvis, and yogis do not necessarily attain the spiritual world, although there's Shanta Rasa in Krishna Loka. So I'm anticipating, you know, that question mark or uncertainty or so forth. It's a certain, there's a big pie and there's a slice. And this is a slice of that big pie. Purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda, is very easily available to devotees. But not to tapasvis, yogis, jnanis, and others who have a bodily conception of life. Of course, there must be some that don't, but some that do. Although this group, tapasvis, yogis, jnanis, and others, they may sometimes be called shantabhaktas, but real bhakti begins with dasya rasa. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Yeyatamam prapadyante tang sataiva pajamyaham mama vartmano vartante manusha parta sarvashaha. Translation. As living entities surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. Everyone is seeking Krishna, for he is the supersoul of all individual souls. Everyone loves his body and wants to protect it because he is within the body as the soul. And everyone loves the soul because the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. Therefore, everyone is actually seeking to achieve happiness by reviving his relationship with the Super Soul. Interesting logic, huh? They just don't know it. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaishtasaya Varahama Vidya, by all the Vedas, it is I who am to be known. Therefore, Karmis, Gyanis, Yogis, and saintly persons are all seeking Krishna, but by following the footsteps of devotees who are in a direct relationship with Krishna, especially the inhabitants of Vrindavan, one can reach the supreme position of associating with Krishna. As it is said, Vrindavanam padityajya padam ekam na gacchati. Or Krishna does not leave Vrindavan even for a moment. The Vrindavan Vasis, such as Mother Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's conjugal lovers, the young gopis with whom he dances, have very intimate relationships with Krishna. And if one follows in the footsteps of these devotees, Krishna is available. Although the Nitya Siddha expansions of Krishna always remain with him, if those engaged in sadhana siddhi follow in the footsteps of Krishna's Nitya Siddha associates, such sadhana siddhas can also easily attain Krishna without difficulty. But there are those who are attached to bodily conceptions of life. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, for example, have very prestigious positions, and thus they have the sense of being very exalted Ishwaras. In other words, because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are guna avatars and have exalted positions, they have some small sense of being like Krishna. But the pure devotees who inhabit Vrindavan do not possess any bodily conception. They are fully dedicated to the service of the Lord in sublime affection, prema. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore recommended prema pumarto mahan. That's that Srinath Chakravarti verse again, Arajo Bhagavan Vrijesha Taniyas, that one that we referred to. This is from there. Prema pumarto mahan. The highest perfection of life is prema, pure love in relationship with Krishna, and Mother Yashoda appears to be the topmost of devotees who have attained this perfection, along with the other topmost of devotees who have attained this perfection. We're not going to match, put on a perfection meter and see who's got the most perfection. We're not going to do that. So, interesting, from Prabhupada's purport, let's see if it's covered in the other commentaries. But the bodily conception, normally we think of, when we're here, I'm this body. But there's the subtle bodily conception, and that is, I have a prestigious position. I'm an exalted Ishwara. Now, they're in service. Certainly, Brahma and Shiva are in service. Anyway, it's a subtle variety of the bodily conception. Okay, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the Bhagavatam propounds Krishna Prema as the highest goal of all human endeavors. Prema is permanently situated in Krishna's eternally liberated associates, Nitya Siddha Parikaras. Parikaras, I had to look it up, means associates. Prema is permanently situated in Krishna's eternally liberated associates, Nityasiddha Parikaras, which means associates. Among the Nityasiddhas, the Brijvasis, or residents of Gokula, Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are best amongst the others who are also best, because they control Krishna by their Vatsalya Prema, parental love. One who follows in the footsteps of Nityasiddhas, like Mother Yashoda, can easily obtain Krishna Prema. Krishna is not available to others. With this intent, the verse is spoken. Then he goes through the phrases within the verse. Dehinam Gopika Sutta. So Gopika doesn't say the name Yashoda, but it's Yashoda. Gopika Sutta, the son of Yashoda. So Dehinam Gopika Sutta. The son of the Gopi, who is Krishna, is the son, is not easily attainable by devotees who still identify with the body, Dehinam, nor by the self-satisfied who no longer identify with the body, Gyaninam. Although they may sometimes be called Shanta Bhaktas, or devotees of sorts, they never get the opportunity to serve Krishna in Vrindavan. They can attain the qualification to serve Krishna only by practicing sadhana bhakti under the guidance of the inhabitants of Braja, which results in Raghunuga bhakti. Doesn't say that. Next, Atma Bhutanam. Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi mentioned in the previous verse are Atma Bhuta. Atma Bhuta. Atma Bhuta means related with the Lord. In this case, Atma means the Lord. Atma Bhuta. Brahma and Shiva are avatars of Krishna, and Lakshmi is his Swarup Shakti. Yet, even these three cannot easily attain Krishna, the son of a gopi. Next, Bhakti Matam Iha. It means devotees Iha in this world. Devotees in this world. This indicates that those who are devoted to Yashoda or other residents of Vrindavan, who are fixed in Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya Rasa, will easily attain Vraja Krishna. Last paragraph for Vishwanath. The Swarup of Bhakti. The Swarup of Bhakti has been defined in Srimad Bhagavatam 1087.23. We heard this one before. Striya Ugra Gendra Boga Bhuja Dhanda Vishakta Dio means, this is the Swarupa Bhakti. How can we, the Shrutis, get bodies like the gopis, who hold Krishna's lotus feet on their breasts and are embraced by his serpentine arms? Far out, huh? The Swarupa Bhakti being defined. The Shrutis and Munis attain Krishna in Braja by serving him in allegiance to the Braja Gopis. Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi could not become subservient to the Braja Gopis due to identifying with their positions on their own planets. Others do not surrender and follow the Brajvasis because of insufficient guidance or a lack of taste. And last for this morning, Jiva Goswami, referring back to chapter 8. How did Yashoda attain her position? How can others attain such a position? The Lord, son of Yashoda, is not easily attained by austerities or other means by people who identify themselves as possessors of the body, Dehinam. If there is association with devotees, somehow, at some time, then gradually a person will attain this. To support the statement, he refers to Bhagavatam 2.3.11. Quote, auspiciousness arises for the worshippers of devatas if firm devotion for the Lord arises from the association with devotees. 2.3.11. Interesting. I'll read it again. Auspiciousness arises for the worshippers of devatas if firm devotion for the Lord arises from association with devotees. Gyanis who know that they are not the body and realize that they are Atma, from the verse Gyaninam Chatma Bhutanam, cannot easily attain such a position, but they also can if they have association of devotees. Who can easily attain that position? The son of Yashoda is attained easily by those dedicated to Krishna, Iha, or to him. Those who have devotion for Mahanarayana are excluded. It is reasonable that the devotees of Narayana do not attain such a position. Here's why. Since those who identify with the body and the jnanis seeing Krishna as a material body do not respect him, and those who worship Narayana seeing his pastimes as a cowherd, even though they do not see him as a material entity, also do not respect him, it is appropriate that devotees of Krishna alone attain such a position of bhakti, for only these devotees realize Krishna's pastimes as the highest. And here comes that celebrated verse again from chapter 12, the Krita Punya Punja verse. Oh. Here's the verse. We'll memorize it by hearing it so many times. Itam satam brahma sukhano brutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashutanam naradarakena sakam vijharo krita punya punjaha. Translation. In this way is referring to all the previous verses of their playful activities together. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him. Though he is pure consciousness or happiness known as Brahman for the jnanis, the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, or an ordinary child for those covered by material illusion. The word Gopika Sutta is not a secondary descriptive element, since it indicates that the highest position was given to Yashoda, the cowherd woman. The word Iha, or to him, indicates, quote, to Krishna, son of Yashoda, since only such devotees attain such a position. Iha, meaning in the world, would be without function in this sentence. So, a detail. The word bhakti matam, or persons having bhakti, is used to indicate, without distinction, a succession of devotees in past, present, and future, since the Vedas teach bhakti and the parampara of teacher and student extends without beginning in the past and not unlimitedly in the future. So it's not just the people who are present with Krishna, it's broader than that. The special characteristic of the son of Yashoda is that in both states, namely sadhana and sadhya, or prema, he gives happiness. That's his special characteristic. Therefore, the devotees of Krishna spread over all time, concentrate on the Lord as the son of Yashoda, as their sadhana, and attain him, sadhya. He remains in that form eternally. He is perfect in that form. Two more paragraphs. Accepting Krishna as the son of Yashoda is a sadhana. However, this is not a sadhana for Yashoda, since if she performed such sadhana, there would be the fault of having to worship herself. There's no question of Yashoda, quote, attaining a position of happiness, for Krishna is the son of Yashoda, as well as Yashoda, Nanda, and others are also included. The focus is on Yashoda, but here Jiva Goswami is helping us understand. Although its focus is on her, it means all the eternal associates of Krishna. Final paragraph. In the various mantras used during Janmashtami Vrata and in Avarana Punja, or worshipping of associates of the main deity during Archana, their names are mentioned. So, Janmashtami Vrata and certain kind of worship where associates of the main deity are worshipped during Archana, their names are mentioned. Thus, previously, when I mentioned, this is Shukadev, when I mentioned Drona and Dara doing sadhana as expansions of Nanda and Yashoda, it was only a pastime in order to awaken your eagerness. How clever. It's a science, but it's also, he's indicating, a pastime, the Drona and Dara pastime, to awaken our eagerness. I mean, the eagerness is an inquisitive spirit, but to understand Krishna Tattva, it's meant to increase our eagerness. So supposing you don't know all this, can you go back to Godhead? Absolutely. And those that had eagerness, does that mean they've become gyanis? Well, they could become gyanis, information gatherers, but it also can be a further illumination of Krishna Tattva. How wonderful is Krishna? Just see this. He is engaging so many people, so many living entities in his pastimes and loving exchanges because they want his association, so he grants it in very interesting, curious, and spectacular ways. So stepping back, this month of Damodar, you know, when we began, there were several days worth of questions like, why do we just focus on this pastime out of all pastimes for a whole month? And it's not like we can't focus on some other pastime, but this pastime is very special. And our acharyas are helping us understand what's special about it. It's the spotlight is on the residents of Vrindavan, specifically Mother Yashoda, but the residents of Vrindavan and the unique kind of love the residents of Vrindavan have, such that Krishna is controlled. So we can say, rightly so, Krishna is controlled by the cowherd boys, Krishna is controlled by the gopis, Krishna is controlled by his mother and father. The way that they control is very different. And even amongst the cowherd boys, different. And amongst the gopis, different. But and the elders that clap and ask him to dance, and he dances, and ask him to sing, and he sings, and ask him to bring articles, and he brings articles. And to the ones that are too heavy, he does what he does for the ones that are too heavy, and pulling the tails of the calves, and they drag him through the mud in the pasturing ground. And on the one hand, he's giving them pleasure. On the other hand, he is enjoying their love. It's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And that's the nature of Vrindavan. Now, the main thing we're hearing this morning and from this little section, the spontaneous love is achieved by the association. You know, that Rupa Goswami's teachings of Raghunuga Bhakti, or the emphasis that goes to Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Raghunuga Bhakti, it's right here, right in the Bhagavatam. It's not spelled out in the detailed way that Rupa Goswami spells it out, but the basis and support, the scriptural evidence, is what we're reading. This very verse this morning. This is the method. So supposing, like one of Radha's questions, you know, is what about Prahlad Maharaj being the best of devotees? It's not wrong to say he's the best of devotees. It's also not wrong to say Mother Jasoda is the best of the devotees. However, Prahlad Maharaj would require the association of the eternal associates of Vrindavan in order to enter into Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, like Mother Jasoda, or like the goddess Lakshmi, or anyone else, or us. You know, we, at this stage, we strive for the sadhana of following vidhis, because that qualification is needed in order to be eligible for more mature stage of bhakti. But even in the beginning stage, according to Rupa Goswami's definition, even in the beginning stage of sadhana bhakti, I've been using this phrase, we should know where the train's going. And the train is going to Brajaprem, and part of the trip to get to Brajaprem is Raghunuga Bhakti. So even knowing that and contemplating, when will I have the qualification? I wish to, hankering for that qualification. And from that hankering, having some eagerness to have the qualification, and then shifting the eagerness to have the qualification to the eagerness to enter into that mood ourselves, it's the gradual unfolding of the bhakti seed that Lord Chaitanya has given through the chanting of the holy name. And anyone that chants the holy name is getting transcendental benefit, no doubt. No doubt. How we give that association of the holy name to the public requires some discretion of what's appropriate, etc. But the objective of association with Krishna through his all-merciful holy name is certainly an essential part of the bhakti process, extending Krishna's mercy to others. And then nourishing that is also requires discrimination, how that is to be done best. According to audience and their capacity and their attachments and so forth. So let's see if there's some discussion.
This is about kind of related to last class about Lakshmi not going to the residence. Does Lakshmi know that she needs to have that mood to go to Vrindavan or the residence? And if she knows, and if she does it, then does she go to Vrindavan?
She went to Vrindavan. Now, you asked a similar question last night. Like, what did Lakshmi feel when she wasn't allowed to enter into the rasa dance? Was it you that asked that? Yeah? So you're asking a similar question. It's different, but it's similar. Did she know? I don't know if she knew, but probably not. Good guess. She's Lakshmi. And there is Krishna, the same as Narayan. So she had that understanding, but did she know that she can't enter the rasa dance without that special arrangement? We don't know, but probably not, because there's no commentary that I'm aware of that says one way or the other what she knew, didn't know, or what she felt or didn't feel. But the principle doesn't change. What about you? Rather than Lakshmi.
And
do you know what's needed? And are you prepared to do what's needed because now you know? Okay, next.
This is a follow-up question on this one.
Same one?
Yeah. And if she does cultivate that bhakti, will Krishna allow her to go?
Yes. He reciprocates with everyone.
And does Lakshmi ever cultivate that?
What's that?
Did Lakshmi ever cultivate that mood, or she was all...
You're asking questions that are, outside of the boundaries of Guru Sadhu Shastra that I'm aware of. I'm asking you again, are you prepared to do what you need to do in order to achieve, rather than what's Lakshmi doing and what did she do? And are you prepared? That's my question to you. You don't have to answer, but I'm circling it back to the application of principle to self-improvement, so to reach the goal. Let's say, supposing you had an answer, yes or no, instead of we don't know. Supposing you had the answer, how is that going to help you reach the goal? And so I'm not chastising, I'm just, guiding. Inquisitiveness is really good. Inquisitiveness is better than good if it's towards striving for the goal, not just information and understanding what's out there. But, how can I reach the goal? That inquisitiveness is particularly good. The other inquisitiveness will likely lead. It's something like, the Bhagavad Gita verse, four types of pious men render service to me. And of the four, those who are distressed, those who are in search of wealth, Bhagavad Gita. Those who are curious. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukrita norjana gyani artarti. So of them, the gyani is best. So don't stop there. Don't just be a gyani. Let it move to the position of, whatever happens with Lakshmi, let me see what I can do to enter into this mood of the Brijbasis. And so what are some of the things I need to do? I'm not saying, you know, stop your inquisitiveness. I'm just modifying or redirecting or guiding that inquisitiveness. That's all. Inquisitive spirit, fantastic. Anything else?
Guru Maharaj, on your point about we should be aware during our sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti stage, where the train is going, as you said. Seems like we are practicing simultaneously sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti and Raganuga sadhana bhakti, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a Ragatmika bhakta in whose footsteps we are following. So is my understanding right that we are actually simultaneously...
Yes, we're in just the immature stage of Raganuga bhakti. That's another way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quite immature stage, but it's leading to that end, and therefore that's the train we're on.
Mm-hmm.
From the very beginning, it's the definition by Rupa Goswami. I may be way down here, I'm just getting on the train, but I have faith.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's going to take me, and the means to get there.
Mm-hmm.
With faith. Yes.
My question is from yesterday, Maharaj. The lecture you mentioned. In the lecture you mentioned about His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj sharing the two set of devotees what to do in for Srila Prabhupada. So I was extending it to what the current state is, where there's multi-gurus, and it could happen that the way a devotee or a disciple understands an instruction could be conflicting with another devotee, the way they received instruction from their spiritual master.
Sure.
So I feel that it really needs a lot of spiritual growth, maturity, and so many other things to be able to have very harmonious execution of devotional service overall, and still be able to follow the individual instructions.
Yes.
Would you like to elaborate on some of the spiritual qualities or qualifications?
Respect. Respecting differences. It's the unity and diversity principle. And in addition to respect, we have our founder Acharya. And here's an example. There's our founder Acharya in this group and that group. There's other examples of this group, that group. When it came to writing biographies about Prabhupada, there were two groups. Those that said, he's a Nityasiddha coming to show us the way of becoming a perfect soul, but he was always a Nityasiddha, descended from the spiritual world. That was one group. Then there's other groups, no. He became what he became. And same, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there's two camps. And, you know, you can argue and say we're right, and no, you're wrong, we're right. So it requires some maturity. And, you know, I'm the kind of person, if this one's right, then that one's wrong. If this that one's right, and then this one's wrong. I'm that kind of person. So we have two camps and then a third camp. So it requires maturity. My guess is, because I wasn't there in Vrindavan, so I don't know what went on, but my guess is some from this camp and some from that camp held tenaciously to their point of view and felt those people were wrong and those people were wrong. And worst of all is ascribed motivation. Without going into the motivation that said send him and the motivation of those that said don't send him. That's to be avoided. Because the intention is pleasing, not something else. Because the ill intention ascribing view is very detrimental. So, maturity, Prabhupada is our founder Acharya, and being faithful without being judgmental. That's part of respect. There, you know, Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they had different moods. So one may be inclined to this mood or that mood or the other mood, but it doesn't mean somebody that has one of, you know, a different mood than the one that you favor today, a mood that's different than the mood that you favor today, then the other mood is not okay. That's immature and it's material. It's detrimental. So persons, those are some factors that unity and diversity. So what's the unity? It harmonizes the diversity. So that's a big part of what Giriraj Maharaj was revealing. It's the intention of serving in a loving mood the spiritual master. That's what Prabhupada was bringing out by that event. So one could say, like Radha asked, you know, which group was right? They were both right. But when Prabhupada said, Krishna has given me the option, that opened the door for the loving expression, we want you to stay. So, that unity and diversity, what's the unity principle? That will help. The unity principle will help. And that's an instruction from our founder, Acharya. Discuss, try to deeply understand unity in diversity. And we don't do that, we just get diversity.
So the respect would mean that that's how that devotee is inspired.
Yes, yes.
And that's it. What is their motivation? We don't need to even go into that.
That's right.
And that's also right. And
I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a certain approach. His son, who loved his father and revered his father like anything, had a very different approach. And sometimes, at least I've read, they would disagree. But in the end, Bhaktisiddhanta deferred. But he had his approach. He was confrontational. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was humble persuasion. Okay, so more?
Yes. So in case of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhakti Saraswati Thakur, are there also two groups which are saying that they were, like you said, ray of Vishnu?
Yes, yes.
And some says no, they are...
Yes, yes, okay. Yes.
So the books that we read, Ray of Vishnu and the Seventh Goswami and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as another Manjari, yes. So is that one point of view about them, or we take those books as authorized?
I'm not sure what you're referring to. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is eternally who he is.
Okay.
We all have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and we may, you know, so have we, that does that mean that we've descended from the spiritual world and here we are, you know, practicing sadhana bhakti? No. So it still can have different views with that, you know, here's his spiritual identity.
Okay.
There's more to it than that, but I won't go there. Radha again.
This is about the relation about how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj left his body and Srila Prabhupada left his body, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left in disgust. So my question is, how is Prabhupada interpreting Bhaktisiddhanta's the reason or the situation?
His Bhaktisiddhanta didn't leave because of disgust. Does that help your question? There was a mood. He was, you know, that's his mood. He was the confrontational mood. And Prabhupada's approach had a different approach. He wasn't, I mean, in certain circumstances, for sure, he was confrontational. But with his disciples, certainly he would admonish and chastise, but it was his style was a loving style. Not that Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't a loving personality. He just exhibited that loving mood in it, you know, in his own way, and different than Prabhupada. It matched their mood. And Prabhupada was very gifted at drawing love, even in the midst of immature people who could argue, you know, over nothing. Or something, and argue and not know how to reconcile their arguments over things. The gift that Prabhupada gave to such persons was their attachment to him. That was what elevated them to the degree they became elevated. He was gifted at having them become attached to him. And how he attached people to him was very different individual by individual. How he did with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, how he did with Lokanath Maharaj, you know, they're very different persons. How he did with Brahmananda, how he did with different devotees was very different. Very, very gifted at having them become attached to him. And some left. And Prabhupada spoke strongly about those that left in an offensive way, and then still he reached out to them. Well, there's some details. Okay?
I'm like curious about all this stuff, but I guess I have to read Lamrita.
Not just the Lamrita, there's many different writings and Prabhupada memories and things. Online.
Yes. I think you already covered the question from Yamuna Mataji.
So next?
Prabhupada Tanitya Siddha. I think you already discussed that. Next question is from Swati Murali Mataji. Guru Maharaj, are there a fixed amount of Nitya Siddhas?
Become a sadhana siddha, please.
Okay.
Yes, because they're nitya siddhas. There's not like increasing souls popping up here and there.
Next question is, can we understand it that nitya siddhas are those who are specifically mentioned in the Bhagavatam and that others who aren't explicitly mentioned are not the eternal associates?
No, because the spiritual world is full of nitya siddhas and they're not mentioned in the Bhagavatam.
This line that we just read, it was a very interesting line to understand this mama vartma anuvartante manushya partha sarvashaha, that everyone follows my path in all respects, that Krishna is saying.
Yes.
And Prabhupada very nicely put it that everyone loves his body because...
Isn't it interesting? The soul is very inside, interesting.
And everyone loves the soul because the soul is a part and parcel of the super soul. And so... Everyone is actually seeking happiness.
They just don't know it.
By reviving their relationship with the Super Soul. I appreciated that point very much.
That was very nice. That was very nice. It's worth remembering that reference for the future. Okay, then we're done.
Thank you.
Prabhupada ki jai.
And it's Rupa Simonash.
Oh, there's one more question that popped up just now.
Okay, go
ahead. So next question, sorry.
Last
popped
question.
Up just now from Shri Radhika Mataji.
Okay.
How does one know the difference between sentimental attachment to spiritual personalities and attachment that is progressing on a maturing path?
When it's steady. It's not wavering. It's not circumstantial. It's not created by external things. It's genuine. It's just sentimental. It'll come and go like the mind flickering. Okay.
Thank you, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.